contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to CITR Radio here on 101.9 FM. Hope everybody is having a very nice and pleasant Tuesday, the second day of the week. So here's the problem, Jeff, is I have to log out of Burley and then log back in so I can play the carts. So there's this, for my show, there's this whole kind of weird buffer of about this. Now we move on. Okay, we'll be right back. You're with the actual show. I'm going to play stuff. Great start, eh? So we don't have that when you do the podcast. I'm going to need you to upload it. This isn't it. This never happened.
Carrie, darling, Carrie. Carrie Brown, I cried. If I can't marry Carrie Brown, believe I'd rather die.
You have wandered into the folk oasis. Welcome to it.
Stop the world and let me on.
You are indeed listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I've been trying to keep my mouth shut, baby. I've been trying to change my dark ways, maybe.
Yes, 8 to 10 p.m. every Wednesday night. It's me, Val, hosting 2 hours of eclectic roots music.
I went downstairs to hear the sun.
Oasis.
Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
Thank you.
Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Joining me in the studio all the way from Kelowna?
No, Terrace.
Terrace.
Yeah. I was in Kelowna for a few weeks, and then I moved again.
Jeff Sargent from the CITR Sports Department. I took a stab at it. That was a fair.
It was an educated guess.
Yeah. You were in. Where was it before? What was that other place you were?
Castlegar.
I was way off.
Last time you thought it was Comox.
Comox.
Not even close.
I live near a street called Comox. Actually,
Yes. That's probably not helping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Saw District 9 last night.
How was it?
It was cool. It was pretty. It was. Neat. Cool. I recommend you go see it. Have you not seen it?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
Don't spoil it.
I recommend you see it. However, for all of you guys or girls out there who are ever listening, I was talking to my friend today, and he said his girlfriend didn't like violence and sci-fi.
Probably not a good choice.
No, don't take her. Ditch her. Leave her at home. It's worth going into the theater. And, I'm not going to say what I was... We'll just move on. But
we could really get in trouble if we go down this road.
Hey, what are you talking about?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing.
Are you promoting ditching the girlfriend to go out and watch?
I am. It's a cool movie, man. It's a cool movie, and people are walking out. Actually.
And who's in it?
Nobody I've ever heard of.
Oh, okay.
Nobody I've ever heard. There are political connotations in it. And just so you know, I mean, I knew this going in, so I'll say it to other people. Is it sort of has a metaphor of apartheid. And you'll see some other things in there that they've kind of thrown in that are also some political
interesting
references, if you will.
So it's an intelligent sci-fi movie.
You know, it was fucking cool.
All right.
I'm gonna go with that one. Weird. It was weird, and I liked it. I apologize for swearing. It was an accident. But we're going to move on.
You just liked it that much.
Yeah. I'm not very intelligent and not very good with wordplay, maybe. Getting worse. And see, the ums are thrown in there. It's just that was the word to use, you know? I couldn't think of anything.
It's a crutch. It's what we call a crutch.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's a crutch. Yeah. I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that. I don't like you anymore. Go home. Go home. On the show today, big show, UBC Thunderbirds men's football team. That is our main and almost only focus of this particular program. UBC got their season underway on the weekend. 26-7 losers to the SFU Clan. SFU goes to 1-0. UBC drops to 0-1. On the show today, we're going to hear very shortly from the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds, Ted Gavea. Their real star, was this a star player of the game, Jeff, or star offensive player?
Yeah, you could say, I think you could say star player, Dave Boyd, racking up some impressive numbers on the ground for the Thunderbirds. We'll get into that later, and more on Billy Green, the quarterback as well, who himself played actually pretty well, but didn't get a lot of help.
Dave Boyd will be on the show with us in this first half hour. 11 carries, 100 yards. Also on the show, CITR color commentator for UBC men's football, Asa Raymond, will be with us. Howard Samura from the Vancouver province. And then the AD at 5:45. You had a one-on-one. Uno a uno.
Yeah.
Bob Phillip.
It's become sort of an annual thing. This time of year, we try to catch up with him and see what's going on, see what's in the works.
What are we going to hear about, Jeff?
Well, a lot of things. Just his thoughts on the start to a new fall-winter season. Things with the Olympics coming up. There's a few wrenches thrown UBC's way with our facilities in that regard. But most importantly, I think, and something that that a lot of people are interested in ongoing is the NCAA issue. Is UBC going? What's going on? SFU will be heading there shortly. But really, what the heck's happening?
I'm starting to take on the mindset. I want them to go. Okay, you're not sure, right? What are you?
I'm
voting yes.
I'm sitting on the fence,
yes,
but if I had to vote, I would vote no.
Oh, you'd vote no. I vote yes. What was the Simpsons episode? Prop 24, was that the one? Remember the one?
Yeah.
I vote yes. But, I interviewed Mike Mosier, head coach of the men's soccer team, a couple weeks ago, and I agree with him. Just make up your bloody mind already.
Well, this is the thing, and if they keep sitting on the fence like that, then recruiting could become an issue. So,
Hey, make up your mind already.
Yeah.
Although it gives us something to talk about for the year, doesn't
That's
it?
True, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Keeping us in the dark could be interesting.
We can just say whatever we want. UBC men's football team, Jeff, for those that are tuning in, did not hear the game. It was broadcasted on 101.9 FM, as will five other UBC games this year, including this Friday night's game in Edmonton, Alberta. You and Tyler Noble will be going there.
That's right.
5:30 pregame show, 6 o'clock kickoff.
5:30 Pacific pregame show, yep. 6 o'clock Pacific kickoff.
Yeah, they know it's Pacific.
Well, I'm just making sure because it's in Edmonton. You know.
They know. Okay. I'm not giving them Edmonton time.
Okay.
Come on, Jeffrey. Come on. Anyways, Jeff, UBC men's football, who, you know, coming into the season, I'm really looking at a team. We're hoping they make the playoffs. That's kind of the goal.
They need to make the playoffs.
They need to make the playoffs. So 4 wins. I mean, that's kind of the magic number we're going with. And, you know, Dan Elliott was on with Wilson Wong and I last week, and we kind of picked out 4 games. We got the 2 Manitoba games, the Regina home game, and the game in Edmonton this weekend. Those are the 4 games they probably have to win. Those are the teams they're battling with for the fourth and final playoff spot. 2 games versus SFU this year. You got to figure, because they play Calgary, they play Saskatchewan, they're going to be in a heap of trouble in those games. But we kind of looked at those SFU games as if they can pick off one of those, they're in great shape. But to start off the year, UBC 26-7 losers, Jeff, didn't get it done. Give us a summary of the game.
Yeah, they didn't get it done. You know, the final score, not totally indicative of how the play went. Both teams started very slow. Not surprising. It's the first game of the season for both. Defensively, UBC looked very good to start. I mean, that was sort of the one aspect of this team that nobody was really sure of. A very young defensive core here. But they seemed to hold their own. Scoreless first quarter, and then SFU got on a bit of a drive towards the end of the first, and first play in the second opened the scoring with a field goal. UBC ended up coming back, and Jordan Grieve getting the nice 10-yard touchdown pass from Billy Green, and later in the second quarter, and that put the Birds up 7-3. They lost momentum pretty quickly thereafter, though, as Gabriel Eppard, for SFU, with a massive 27-yard run in the final minute of the half. And really, that was the beginning of the end, as we'll hear more as we talk to Asa about that as well. It really was the beginning of the end. Going into the half, down 10-7. I mean, you think about that, UBC did look to be going in the right direction, at least offensively. Their defense started to fall apart a little bit. And then as soon as the third quarter opened, it didn't go that well. A pair of field goals for SFU in the third. Another Jason Cook field goal. He played a very good game for special teams for Simon Fraser. And then Halverson with a short run late in the fourth quarter, really sealing the deal. And UBC's offense had a lot of trouble finding the red zone. Billy Green, you look at his numbers there, Daryl, and actually we found some really interesting stats we'll get to in a sec here. You know, he played pretty well. He was able to find his receivers, spread the ball out. We'll hear from Dave Boyd, who had a great game on the ground for the Thunderbirds, but couldn't find the red zone. A couple of key drop passes. Misha Thiel dropped 2 surefire touchdown passes. And special teams for the Thunderbirds not looking that great. They had trouble punting, and field position killed them.
Yeah, you look at Billy Green's numbers, and I had a wedding to attend. I couldn't go to this game on the weekend. Colby Crockett got married, my old high school friend. Shaughnessy Golf Club.
Ooh,
that's where the wedding was
fancy.
At. Yeah. Billy Green, 14 for 23 on the day. 1 touchdown. No turnovers by either team in this football game. No fumbles, no interceptions.
Right. It was a very clean game when you think about it that way, yeah.
Billy Green had the 1 touchdown, but those numbers, you know, you look at it, didn't play well enough to win the game. That's what those numbers say to me. Maybe didn't lose the game, but not well enough to win the game.
He gave them a chance to win.
But a couple of big drop passes hurt UBC in this one.
Yeah, Misha Thiel did not have a good afternoon on Saturday. He picked it up with a couple of catches after that, but really, I mean, not to the extent that he had earlier, especially as his second drop, I would say there was no one at least within 10 or 12 yards of him. Even more, I'd say. He was down at about the 20, and looking over his shoulder, he decided to catch it over the shoulder instead of turning around, catching it. And even, I think, even if he fell down, he still probably would have had time to get up and run it in the end zone. But, you know, it's tough to teach these things. You can practice it all you want, and you put a young team out there on the field, and these things are going to happen.
Yeah, you mentioned, we'll have him on a sec, Dave Boyd, 11 carries, 100 yards. Chen Wei, also a good game on the ground. 10 carries for 62. Leading receiver for UBC, Jordan Grieve, 5 receptions for 38 yards. UBC, not one completed pass over 20 yards. SFU had 3. So that was the difference in the ball game. For SFU, Bernd Dietrich, 13 for 23, 185 yards. Their leading man on the ground, Gabriel Ephard, 8 carries for 73. And the touchdown. But yeah, you talked about special teams being the difference in this ball game. I mean, this is what I missed the game, and you know, you go on the stats and you're seeing what jumps out at me. I saw the no turnovers. I saw both teams pretty effective on the ground. Bernd Dietrich and SFU more effective than UBC in the air, but not a huge discrepancy there. You know, it's about 60 plus yards. Average field position. Each team had 13 possessions. SFU starting field position, their own 52. That's good.
That's pretty good. You're basically at center field to start.
UBC starting field position, their own 31. That's below where you want to be. You got to figure the average is about the 35-yard line. That adds up to a differential in starting field position in those 13 possessions of 273 yards that UBC was, you could say, trying to make up for in this football game. And when you have an offense that doesn't complete one pass over 20 yards, it's going to be tough to do. So
yeah, that's a big hole you're putting yourself in.
Punting the football, UBC net punting. So that's your punt minus the team's return. UBC, of their 9 punts in the ball game, 6 went for 25 net yards or less. They had 1 of negative 2, 1 of plus 6, 1 of plus 10. Not good at all. SFU of their 5 punts, 1 25 yards or less, and that 1 was 25 yards. So that says a lot right
there.
It does say a lot,
and it's really more than the punter himself. It was the punt cover team that had a lot of trouble.
Yeah, for SFU, it was Jeff Thompson, big day returning kicks, 6 returns for 100 yards, over 15 yards returning per return. UBC, returning kicks on punts, 5 returns, 13 yards total. That's under 3 yards per return. So could you see that? You saw that? That was definitely a factor.
Special teams, if you had to pick one factor, was the difference at the end of the day. And you look at that, 273 yards difference. That is huge. Most teams, you know, can't get that much in total offense in a game, let alone have that as a whole to start from. So,
well, we caught up with the head coach. Jeff did, actually. I was still on the bus.
Yeah, what bus was that? What route did you
UBC
take?
44 from downtown. Okay. Yeah.
Have you taken Canada Line yet?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. You should. It's fun.
Never. I don't know.
Wait, I heard you talking about this recently, but
I still haven't done it. I have no reason to.
Yeah.
If I go to Rich, you know, I live downtown.
That's,
You know?
Anyway.
We'll get into that.
We will.
During our nonsense chatter a little later on. You caught up with the head coach, Ted Gavea.
Yeah, I spoke with them earlier today, and they're actually practicing later than usual. They're getting set for their later start time in Alberta. So caught up with head coach Gavea and asked him about, again, his thoughts from Saturday's home opener and what changes need to be made for Friday's away start to the season in Edmonton.
Here's Jeff and Coach Gavea.
Just again, your thoughts on the overall execution, or in some cases, the lack of execution by the team and you know, what needs to change moving forward here?
Well, I mean, you know what? I thought we did a pretty good job on offense. There was a couple missed assignments here and there, but we moved the ball effectively at certain times. We didn't turn the ball over, which was great. And, you know, on defense, you know, for the most part, we did a pretty good job. And where we kind of fell short overall was on specialty teams where, you know, we played a lot of young people and paid the price for doing it. But, you know, the film, you know, didn't look as bad as the score, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, and it just seemed to kind of get away in the end there. It certainly seemed like Billy had control of the game. He had control of his offense in any case. And, you know, it was really just a few key plays that really made a big difference in the end.
Yeah, and that's usually the case with a young team, right? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, there are certain times in the third quarter where, you know, we dropped some balls and didn't make some plays that we need to make. But, you know, again, with the young guys playing, they got to go through that, and hopefully they learn from it.
And did you get a chance to talk with him after the game about the couple stumbles there? We chatted with him in our post-game show, and he said, you know, we just hit a few potholes on the field there. I mean, the field itself is an ongoing concern for teams in general, but do you sense that he was just getting a little tired at the end there, or did he have any concerns he said to you?
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I've watched NFL films of guys falling down on their own. So, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't make a big deal about that. It's hard to say anything. I mean, what do you tell a guy? Don't fall down. I mean, you know, I just kind of blew that off. I'm not concerned about that because I don't expect that's, you know, it's not a technical problem. It's a field issue. So, no, I didn't really address it at all, actually.
You mentioned special teams. Pavopoulos ended up playing a... there were concerns that he may have had a slight injury there. Just your thoughts on his performance on Saturday.
Well, I mean, Billy's young, and you know, he's playing as a freshman in his first university game, and you know, he did tweak something during training camp, and he was injured, and did the best job he could. And you know, at times he made some decent kicks for us, but you know, we're always striving for a little more consistency at the kicker position, but that happens over time too.
And probably the most unfortunate incident in the game on Saturday, Tyler Codron going down with an injury. Do we have any more update on his knee?
Yeah, he's gone. You know, he's gone for the year. So we got to fight through that. You know, unfortunately, we've lost two 50-year players on defense that we probably couldn't afford to lose, you know, in any year. But, you know, I mean, the guys got to rally around that and give other guys an opportunity to play.
And looking forward here to the first road game of the season going into Edmonton this coming weekend. Really, is it just going with the status quo? Because as you said, you know, it was just a few key issues last week that kind of led to the loss in the end. I mean, does much really need to change philosophically or in terms of game plan?
No, I don't think anything needs to change. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we need to do a better job in certain areas in terms of understanding our assignments. I mean, we ended up playing a lot of backups at the end of the game, and you know, unfortunately, it didn't look like some of them actually had a full grasp of what they were doing, and that's pretty common at university when you play with some high school guys in their first appearance. They struggle through it, and they learn from it, and they respond. But, you know, I got to credit our guys. I mean, they came out yesterday. We had a great practice, and they're excited. So, you know, looking forward, I mean, the only thing we can control is our attitudes and our approach to what we do. And I come to work at the same day every day and leave at the same time, and so do our coaches. So nothing's changed, and you know, we're pretty optimistic that we can turn things around.
And this being the second game of the season for UBC, does that give any sort of extra edge there to you as opposed to Alberta, who has not played yet? I suppose the rust factor, you could say, is worn off for the Thunderbirds.
Well, they played a game already, too. So, you know, I mean, they played an exhibition game against the University of Saskatchewan, and they've played a game as well. So, you know, will it work in our favor? You know, I both teams have played one game, so we're pretty equal. You know, I think that you know, we've rested and we're ready to go again. So you know, we'll find out.
It's such a short season, just 8 games. I mean, already dropping the first one there, but is it too early to say that this is really a must win going into Edmonton this weekend?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't like to use the word, you know, the term must win, because, you know, in the game of football, it's 8 games. Every game's a must win. So, you know, is this game important? Sure. So was last week's, and the week after that will be important too. So, no, I don't think this game takes on any more significance than any other game. We want to win them all, and that's the way you approach it.
UBC does have a young defense, and it was something I noticed just on the field just before kickoff at the end of the pregame warm-up, was just a real commitment to wanting to make a statement was something I heard a couple times there from the guys. How did you feel that green defense performed?
You know what? I thought that they did pretty well at certain stages of the game, and they, you know, they kept us in it the first half. And you know, maybe if we had scored that corner route that we threw, I mean, maybe that would have gave them the lift. But you know, honestly, we left them on the field for a long time in the third quarter, and you know, I think that wore them down for the fourth. So, you know, they're young, and you know, I don't you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing if we can get better every week rather than, you know, kind of working off their first appearance in a university football game. You know, they, as long as they work hard and they stay committed to getting better, they'll improve every week, and we'll see how they are at the end of the season.
I wanted to ask you about Boomer, who did get some, I believe, a couple series in at the end there. This being into his third season here, how do you feel that his performance is, and what does he really add to the team? He has that experience of being in that backup role here, and is how can he really help Billy in that regard?
Well, I mean, you know, Billy and Boomer are going through it together, and you know, to be honest with you, I couldn't ask for a better number two quarterback. He's a great kid. He's got a winning attitude. He's positive, and he's very supportive of Billy and in his role on the team, and he knows he's going to be ready when his number's called. So, you know, I'm pretty lucky that way that, you know, he's got the great demeanor and carries himself and is a true leader. So, you know, Boomer and Billy do work well together, that's for sure.
And just one other thing before we let you go. Coach Scott sure. McQuaig made an appearance there the other day at the game. It must be great to see another UBC product, you know, coming back to BC to play for the Lions. I mean, that must be something special for you as well to see.
You know what? It is. It's awesome. You know, we were so happy to see Scott back. He actually came out to practice the day before and came to dinner with the team. And, you know, I mean, Scott's, you know, I bet any money if you talk to Scott, he wish he had a uniform on and was playing helping for us when he was watching it. But, you know, it's certainly awesome that he was able to get back at home with the home team Lions. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to put more guys in that situation down the road.
Thanks very much, Coach, and we'll see you in Edmonton on Saturday for the big game, or make that Friday for the big game.
Great. Thanks a lot.
So that's Jeff Sargent sitting to my left here with head coach Ted Gavea. And, you know, going over the ball game, Jeff, you mentioned very young team on special teams. Tyler Codron, though, we never got into him. Senior defensive back for the Thunderbirds. ACL injury, done for the season.
Done for the season, yeah. His CIS career is now over. And as you heard Coach Govaya there say, that's a big loss for this team. As you just mentioned, very young, and there's a lot of experience that just went down the drain. I mean, sure, he'll be able to help him from the sideline, but he's not going to be on the field. And, you know, it didn't look that bad at first. He stayed. It happened very early in the game. He stayed on the trainer's table with some ice on his knee. He came back after the half break, though, on crutches, so you knew it was not looking as good. And yeah, he heard his knee pop a little there, and I guess he went and checked it out with the doctors over the weekend, and not good. So that's very disappointing.
We'll get to the Dave Boyd interview, star running back for UBC on the weekend, 11 carries, 100 yards in a second here. But you also talked to him about the Alberta game being a must-win game. Once again, it's not a must-win, but if you don't win this one, you're all of a sudden... Now you're into must-win.
It certainly makes it very difficult.
It's around the corner.
And it's one of those four games.
It's one of the four games that you figure these are where the four are going to come from. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. They defeated Alberta last year. This is an Alberta team that was 2-6 last year. We'll see. Next interview, Jeff, you caught up with Dave Boyd.
That's right, yeah. Certainly, I think, safe to say, the brightest star for the Thunderbirds overall on Saturday's home opener, another veteran guy. And, you know, he got it done on the ground. And him and Billy Green certainly seemed to connect well. And I caught up with him, asked him about his personal performance and also about his assessment of the team and how they've done so far. Well, it's been a few days now since the season opener back on Saturday. How have you been able to look at it now? You digested it for a couple days, and obviously it's just looking forward now to the next game. But again, what were some of the key things that you saw looking back at game tape that really need to change?
I think the biggest thing was our special teams, actually. We played a lot of new guys, actually. So, you know, they had it was their first taste of game speed at the CIS level. A lot of them are right out of high school. So we had some difficulties, especially in our cover teams. So I think that was probably the biggest thing that we need to work on from the game.
You were a big highlight for the UBC Thunderbirds back on Saturday. You obviously looked very comfortable out there. Was it difficult at all for you working with Billy? I mean, obviously you've had a chance to do so before, but you looked very comfortable out there, and even though you haven't had that much real game time together.
Well, actually, we finished the season together. He got in there for the last couple games, and then obviously we had the entire off season working together, so I feel... totally comfortable with him. Our exchanges are always good. But yeah, it was he settled in back there now, so we feel pretty comfortable together.
The offense in general looked very comfortable, at least from my point of view. Billy was able to find his receivers as well. I guess just execution, just the finer points now, is that really the key now?
Yeah, actually, I was really happy with the way our offense performed. I personally think we're a lot farther ahead this year in our first game as opposed to last year. We moved the ball pretty much at will on the ground. Billy had a pretty decent day. We had, I think, 4 drop balls. So if we would have completed those, I think Billy would have went 18 for 25, which is a pretty good day. So it was really, we kind of beat ourselves in terms of dropping balls.
Yeah, you mentioned special teams as well as probably the major concern. Was that the big focal point of practice the last couple days here then?
Yeah, actually, the mindset has, in terms of the tempo we practice special teams with this week, has changed a lot, actually. We've kind of amped up the tempo in practice, and guys are getting it after it when we're doing our special team circuits. So I think we'll see a big improvement this week in Alberta.
And I know that Coach Govai has scheduled practices for a bit later this week, I guess in preparation for a later game time. I know it's just one province away as well, but does that really make a big difference going from an afternoon game on Saturday and then to an evening game on the road in Edmonton? Is that something really that is a big focal point for you?
No, I don't think it's so much the time change that's the biggest difference. I think in this case it'll be the surface going from grass to turf will be the biggest change.
How was the turf at UBC? The field seemed to be in fairly good condition. Billy, of course, hit a couple holes there at the end of the game, but it seemed to be in fairly good shape.
Yeah, actually, it's the beginning of the season, so it's in pretty good shape. You know, obviously, when we get later on in September and October with the rain, it can get a bit muddy, but for now, it's in pretty good shape.
As one of the more senior guys on the team, Dave, you've had a chance to obviously watch the defense play as well, and I think that's the one area that many people were wondering how would turn out, but I think they surprised quite a few people on Saturday with their performance.
Yeah, actually, we lost our entire defensive line, so that was kind of the group that I was watching the most from the sideline, and I actually thought they, you know, they showed some spark. We had, I think, 2 or 3 sacks. Serge Kaminsky played well, and because he's starting in the middle for us now. But yeah, it was pretty impressive. There's obviously still lots of work to be done, but for their first start as kind of a new unit, I thought they did pretty well.
Tyler Codron going down for the rest of the season, that is obviously a big loss for the team.
Yeah, actually, he's a huge veteran for us in the secondary there. And it was tough. I think we lost him it was his first snap, I think, actually. It was on punt team. It was his first time on the field. So to lose him on his very first play of the season, that's huge for us. So we're just going to have to try and, you know, hope the backups are ready to go and move on.
Between yourself and Cheng Wei, it's a pretty good run game that the Thunderbirds have got there. How do you two complement each other on the field?
I think we both have similar styles. Kind of we're not really like a thunder and lightning 1-2 punch. We have similar styles. We're built kind of similar, so we stay fresh when we sub each other out, so we can just keep pounding it the whole game.
And any changes on the return game? Are you going to maybe get a few more looks there, or what's the plan there? Is it going to be status quo?
Yeah, actually, I might talk to our special teams coordinator, maybe getting back for some kick returns. Betts does a pretty good job with the punt returns, but I might see if I can get back there.
And just, again, looking ahead to this Friday's game in Edmonton, always exciting to go on the road, but a lot to prove here with the 0-1 start.
Yes, I think we think that this is a game that's definitely winnable for us. For the past 5 years, actually, we've always had super close games with Alberta, a lot of them coming down to the last play, actually. I'm excited. This is my Alberta is actually the only place I haven't been in the Canada West, so this is my first time going there. So I'm excited. I think we're having a good practice week, and it should be fun.
And better to play in Alberta in September than in late October.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dave, and we'll be seeing you on Friday for the big game against Alberta, and best of luck, and thanks again for joining us.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Dave Boyd, running back for the UBC Thunderbirds, notching up 100 yards on 11 carries. Solid day for him back on Saturday. UBC actually outrushing SFU, 167 total yards on the ground for the Thunderbirds. For an offense that overall struggled to get it done, and something I just mentioned to you, Daryl, a guy that didn't find the ball thrown his way, Spencer Betts, who lit it up on returns last year for the Thunderbirds, only one catch for 5 yards back on Saturday.
Yeah, UBC 26-7 losers in the game, and you know, you hear what Dave Boyd said, special teams. I mean, we did it, Jeff. SFU average start on 52, UBC on their own 31. That's a difference in the 13 possessions of 273 yards. And Dave Boyd actually mentioned in that interview right at the end there that he was going to ask to go back, return some kicks for the Thunderbirds, not getting it done returning kicks, UBC, at all. On the 5 punt returns, average less than 3 yards per carry. On the 3 kick returns, just over 6 yards per return. And they were giving up some big returns, so it's definitely something they're going to have to fix.
Absolutely. Yeah, they have to fix, absolutely. And Spencer Betts, last year, as we mentioned, before he went down with his concussion later in the season, lighting it up in his rookie season for UBC, and just didn't seem to have the opportunity on Saturday, but he's going to have to bounce back quickly here as well if they're going to improve on their special teams game.
Jeff, you know, and talking to Coach Gavea and talking to Dave Boyd there, the offense, they played okay, hey?
They played okay, yeah. And I think the general feeling after the game was that they don't really need to change that much. Again, it was a few little key issues. The two drop passes thrown to Misha Thiel, huge. You know, and later in the game when Billy fell down a few times there, just those things. If they had just executed getting into the red zone, which they're capable of doing, clearly, Billy had time, his O-line held, and they seemed to have things there. It just didn't click all at once for some reason.
So you expect down the road, you know, they mentioned that Coach Gavea, he played a bunch of young guys on special teams. You get to travel with smaller rosters.
Mm-hmm.
So you think he's going to go with the veterans? No messing around on the kick returns here today.
You'd have to think. I mean, that was, everyone can agree that special teams was the one thing that killed the Thunderbirds. And, you know, the offense they were reasonably happy with. I think the defense they were reasonably happy with. So, yeah, in order to give him a real chance there, you can't have that 273 yards differential. That will be very difficult to win a football game.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a break here on Wieners Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. When we're back, we're going to have Asa Raymond, the color commentator for UBC Thunderbird men's football, at about 5:25 from the Vancouver province. Howard Samura will be with us, and at about the 5:45 slot, the athletic director of the entire school.
The boss.
Is he the boss?
Well, he's the athletic director.
Boss of the athletic department.
Right.
Because Bruce Springsteen's the boss.
Right. But he's in Philadelphia.
Well done. Well done. Way to hang in there with my nonsensical ramble. Are you going to go see District 9 now?
I'm pretty intrigued.
Am I selling it to you?
Yeah, you are. Well, with the violence and everything.
Probably
and
too much. I hope I didn't build it up too much. But
It could be disappointing.
I liked it, man. I liked it. All right, we're going to take a couple quick little breaks here. We'll be back with Asa Raymond, color commentator for UBC Thunder men's football. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
CITR 101.9 FM and Union Events present Classified, a Nova Scotian award-winning rapper with Australian group Hilltop Hoods. You've heard his hit single Anybody Listening from his newest album Self-Explanatory. Now hear him live on Wednesday, September 9th at 8 o'clock at the venue, 881 Granville Street. Tickets on sale now.
Yeah, the state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now, hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a cry. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver, CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. This is Beth.
Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
Hi, this is Martina Navratilova, and I know you're a hockey fan, but there is some tennis from Daryl Wiener and CITR.
Thank you, Martina.
I don't have any tennis.
That's my favorite. CITR. And she mentions you. That's pretty cool.
She's Martina Navratilova, man. And the U.S. Open's going on.
Just starting.
Yeah. Who you taking?
Who am I taking?
Who you taking?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think Federer will be all right.
Yeah, obviously. Well,
I don't follow tennis very well, to be honest with you.
Loser.
Yeah.
Winner. I don't know. I'd like to see Andy Roddick. I'm erotic. I didn't used to be.
His antics don't sit well with me.
Oh, he you know what?
You know, he's worse than McEnroe was.
No.
He's getting there.
Not even close.
You keep him in for another 2 years,
He's a king right now. He's amazing out there. Here's a guy, he's got the hottest wife, he's made all his money, he's won his major.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous, hosted Saturday Night Live, and he's still out there fighting to get better and beat these guys. And that Wimbledon, did you see that final?
Yeah, yeah.
You saw that.
He was.
How can you not root for Roddick after watching that Wimbledon?
Yeah, yeah. He's, you know, you said he does stick with it, and he's had his share of ups and downs.
And he could just kind of say, but, hey, I'm done. You know, I'm not as good as Federer and Nadal. I've made all my money. I'm famous. I've got everything. But he's still out there fighting. And where he really proved to be good. This is the moment he did. Andy, this was your moment. This was the moment of the year. One of them. Who knows? Lots of stuff happens in here, but this was a good one. Federer has just beat him, and Federer's given his speech. This is winning Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And Federer's given his speech, and he goes, you know, Andy, I know how you feel. This is, right after the match.
In front of the crowd. Yeah.
He goes, Andy, I know how you feel. I had the same kind of loss happen to me last year with Nadal. And Roddick yells out, but you'd already won 5! He just wants his one! He just wants his one! Federer's now beat him in 3 Wimbledon finals. So, out of his 6, he's beaten Roddick in 3 of them.
You're having trouble with your chair there.
Yes. It's stuck. Dude, it is fully stuck.
Wow, it's a new chair.
We're gonna have to play the ASA interview, and I'll try to fix the chair in the meantime. We caught up with CITR's color commentator Asa Raymond doing his
top notch
third year. Is it his third year?
Fourth? This is his third year, I guess. Yeah,
doing color commentator for football.
Yeah, I guess I'm supposed to take it from there. Is that the idea?
Microphone.
Daryl's still trying not to rip the board apart. Well, the cord is stuck under the chair.
It's stuck on the wheel over here. The wire, like.
Anyway, Asa, of course, in the booth with Ryan Sullivan and Tyler Noble back on Saturday, and he joined us earlier this afternoon. He's one of the assistant coaches of the Notre Dame Jugglers, I believe. He's helping them out this year, and so he's practicing right now, so we couldn't miss that. But we caught up with him a bit earlier and talked about the loss for the Thunderbirds back on Saturday and how things are looking.
All right, here I am with Asa Raymond, color commentator for UBC Thunderbird men's football. Asa, straight up, your thoughts, UBC Thunderbird season opener, the loss versus SFU.
That was a tough one. I think that UBC came out strong. They showed that they could score and play well in the first half. For whatever reason, they had a bit of a lull just before the end of the first half, and that's when they found themselves behind. They were able to take the lead, go up 7-3, but that last drive with a minute 35 left, allowing SFU to score, was the difference. They go down 10-7 at the half and then really couldn't come back in the second half and have the same sort of performance they did in the first.
So the big touchdown run at the end of the first half, that's what stuck out for you, hey?
Exactly. Well, so that whole drive, I mean, they scored with a minute 35 left in the first half, and then on the ensuing kickoff, they allow a big return and really couldn't stop get a stop on that drive and end up going down 10-7 at the half in a half where they should have been leading, really, in my books.
How much did special teams, punting in particular, and punt returning by SFU, play a factor in this game, Asa?
Well, I believe in that game, anyways, it was the play of Thompson, of...
That's the kid from St. Louis on SFU.
That's right, Jeff Thompson, the punt returner, who had a big game. I don't know if they weren't too sure of his speed and his ability to make people miss. Obviously, he didn't see... didn't have the ability to make a stop on him, and he ended up returning for 100 yards in the game on punt returns alone.
Asa, would you say that the UBC defense had a tough time reading Bernd Dietrich? He seemed to get away with a lot.
Well, Bernd Dietrich's a special player in the fact that he is a bit of a veteran in this league now. He knows the offense well. He knows his players. He knows their ability, and he really doesn't make many mistakes. In the years that I've seen him now, he plays simple. He doesn't do a whole lot, but he's able to use his athleticism to make plays on the ground, and then he can throw as well, throw for over close to 200 yards in the game.
And your thoughts on the UBC quarterback, Billy Green? I mean, they catch those couple deep balls. He's had a really good day, hey?
Well, that's exactly right. I thought Billy Green played well, and it was funny because coming into the game, I thought Billy Green had to have a good game for them to win. I thought he did have a good game. Unfortunately, they still came up short. He threw for over 100 yards. Like you said, the UBC receivers dropped a couple balls. Misha Thielen, in particular, had two drops in a row. That doesn't help you offensively. But Billy Green is a strong passer. I think this year he should put together a good year.
And the backfield in general looks very strong for UBC. Dave Boyd had a great game as well.
Yeah, Dave Boyd was the highlight of the UBC offense, running for 100 yards in the game, and that's what they have to do. I think that they have to stick to the run more and then let Billy Green throw off of the run. So look for UBC in the future anyways to try to establish the run a little bit more.
Your thoughts, Asa, UBC. Obviously, you know, I'm kind of picking 4-4 as sort of the magic number to get that playoff spot. They go to Alberta this weekend, a team who's, you know, like UBC, probably like Regina and Manitoba, are going to be the teams battling for that fourth and final playoff spot. You know, very early in the season to say must win, but you almost can do it this weekend, can't you?
You need to win this next game. Unfortunately, they put themselves behind the eight ball with the loss against SFU. They can win, though, and you're right, that 4-4 number seems to be the magic number. That's what a lot of these bubble teams are looking at. I think UBC can get there. They do, I believe they have to win this next game, and they can. They have to, again, go back to their running game and run behind this huge offensive line that they've put together.
Hey, so you're voting in the CIS top 10, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You've got UBC in that top 10, or you used your mind as opposed to your heart on that one?
You know, that was a tough one for me, but I did keep them out. Unfortunately, my top 10 poll had a lot of the East. It was pretty East heavy.
What do you know about the East, Asa?
You know what? And that was just it. It was funny. Coming into the season, it was tough because you basically go off of what you'd seen last year and what you read about. And
That was it. It was a tough go for me, though. I had a tough time putting it together.
So who are the Canada West? Have you done, like, your top 10 for this week, or when's that due?
The top 10 for this week was due on Sunday.
Did you get it in?
And that one, we were able to leave it for the next week, for the prior week.
Well, I did, too. I vote as well. There's really no point from one game, I figure.
That's right.
You can make SFU, like, number two in the country, though.
Exactly. How much changes after 1 week? But you know what? I did enjoy the fact that we at least saw some football. It's so tough making that poll without seeing any football, though.
Well, I don't think, actually, there should be a preseason poll. Yeah. I think you got to at least have, honestly, at least 2 weeks, because if you make a team number one or five or something in the preseason, the other teams who have to kind of vault them, which isn't right, if that makes sense, you know?
No, I agree 100%, and that's why I'm basically scrapping the first poll that I did once I see everyone play. Because you can't just start juggling teams around based on games that haven't been played or teams that haven't played yet.
You talk about that magic 4-4 record. Look at SFU, and they lost so much this past offseason, but they picked up right where they left off. I mean, they're a force that UBC has to deal with now more than ever as well.
Yeah, that 4-4 number, I guess that you're talking about, to get the playoff spot, I think SFU has done a great job in putting themselves in position to get their four wins, first of all. Now, I actually like what the coaching staff has done there. They've put in a nice winning attitude, it seems like, and that is anchored around that quarterback that we mentioned earlier, Vern Dietrich. What a special player he is. And then just putting talent around him. Like we mentioned Jeff Thompson as well before, but Gabe Everett, what a talent he is. Just injury-riddled last year, but yeah, great players all the way around, and I look for a good year for them.
Asa, thanks so much for doing this. Last thing, the big thing, UBC, I mean, two real big games coming up in the next couple weeks on the road in Alberta, in Manitoba. Almost, you know, we'll see. I mean, if they don't win both of those, they are going to be in trouble. What do the Thunderbirds have to do to pull it out?
We're going to go back to it, and I like the fact that they're on the road possibly, because that last game, they had a good, strong first half, and then they let the game get away from them. Hopefully on the road, they'll stick to the running game and just grind it out on the road as you're supposed to, and maybe come back a better team. So they just need to keep running it out, and hopefully Billy Green can make some plays as well.
Asa, thanks so much for doing this.
No problem, guys.
Asa Raymond joining us there, Jeff. Jeff, you know, we're going to have Howard Samura on from the Vancouver province momentarily. We're just going to take a quick PSA break. We'll be right back with Howard. The Alberta game, UBC 0-1 right now. You know, we'll go over it again. We've got them sort of positioned to make the playoffs. 4-4 is the number. Mm-hmm. If you want to make the playoffs, would you say they have to make the playoffs?
Well, you know, I thought about it right after I said that. I said, that might be a bit much. It is a young team. But having missed as much as they have in recent years, I think it's very important for the program that they make the playoffs this year.
And, you know, you're looking at teams that are going to be in the CIS top 10. Calgary, Saskatchewan. They got to play both of those teams. SFU, you know, they got one more shot at SFU. So you got to figure their tough games versus Calgary and Saskatchewan. That's three losses.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Alberta in this weekend, who they beat last year, was 2-6 last year. Manitoba twice. And Regina at home and one game at SFU, which will be the Shrum Bowl.
Right.
They have to win four of those five games. You got to figure, because unless they can pull off a huge upset versus Saskatchewan or Calgary. So this weekend, if they go 0-2, losing in Alberta, suddenly you're looking at those SFU, two Manitoba, and Regina, they pretty much got to sweep them. So not an official must-win game, but
no, but it's getting
win.
There.
You don't win, now you're into must-wins. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we don't want to write off the Calgary or Saskatchewan games, but they're going to be tough. And I think, you know, if you're looking at the numbers, and it's such a short season, you can't help but look at it. I mean, even before the game on Saturday, it's like, well, how is this going to break down? And in such a short season, every game is just so important. But they were in that game against SFU. They could have won that game, no question. It's not like they were outclassed by the Clan. Give the Clan all the credit. They weren't outclassed by SFU. So, you know, most games that they will play this season will be winnable games. But if they don't win on Friday against Alberta, it's going to be very tough already.
And the other thing I want to ask Howard when he's on, SFU now, is it now official They are the premier team in British Columbia. It is now, isn't it?
And they'll be leaving.
Well, they'll still be playing.
Yes, but not in
somewhere else. That's somewhere right. else. Somewhere else. When we're back, Howard's, although UBC may join them.
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. When we're back, Howard Samura from the Vancouver Prompts will be with us. Stick around at about 5:45. The athletic director from UBC, Bob Phillip, will be with us. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
Right to Play is an international humanitarian organization using sport and play programs to encourage the healthy physical, social, and emotional development of the world's most disadvantaged children. RTP at UBC is run by a team of committed university students who advocate sport for development, and it is the first university chapter of its kind. We want you to get involved. Together, we can educate students about sport for development, help raise money, and teach children here in the Lower Mainland about the importance of sport and a healthy lifestyle. So check us out at www.interchange.ubc.ca/RTPUBC.
Welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR. Jeff Sargent here co-hosting with Daryl Wiener, and we are going to be chatting momentarily, I believe, with Howard Samura of the Vancouver Province, who, once again, as we continue our all-out football coverage here today, Howard was, of course, at the game back on Saturday. And do we have Howard on the line? No, okay. We don't have Howard on the line just yet, but anyways, Howard coming up in a few moments as we continue this coverage of UBC football. And Daryl, we were just talking about the must-win scenario that UBC is soon to face here. And you know what? I really think they need to win this game against Alberta. It's a young team, and do you really want to be putting – you don't want to put any team in such a dire situation, but such a young team.
Yeah, well, we'll see. And, you know, one thing is when you're home, because I'm going to go back to the special teams here, Jeff. When you're home, you know, you get the bigger roster, and apparently they played a lot of young guys on the special teams coverage. So, you know, on the road, maybe we'll get a more veteran UBC lineup in the special teams, and maybe that'll make the difference. Joining us right now, thank you so much. For the first time, actually the school year hasn't started. For the first time in the UBC sports year, 2009-2010, a great friend of the station, Howard Samura of the Vancouver Province. Howard, thanks so much for doing this. Know you're up against a deadline. We won't keep you too long, but thanks for doing this, Howard.
Well, Daryl, it's good to be with you, and I've actually got my problem solved, so I'm good for as long as you need me here.
You shouldn't have said as long as we need you, Howard. You're going to regret that in about an hour from now.
Okay.
Howard Samura from the Vancouver Province. Howard, let me get your thoughts. UBC and SFU, two teams you both cover for the newspaper. Thunderbirds fall to the Clan 26-7. What did you see out of these two clubs?
Well, I mean, I saw a little bit more precision, obviously, overall execution by Simon Fraser on Saturday. That was for sure, especially, I'm sure you guys have talked about the excellent special teams play, especially on kick returns by the Clan. I think they made the big difference, you know, in that game. And you know, Ted Gavaya, the UBC coach, obviously afterwards was unhappy with the special teams play. And I think, you know, you look at what UBC did from a passing and a rushing standpoint, I mean, the statistics were virtually, you know, a saw-off between the two teams. But, you know, Simon Fraser made big plays on special teams. I thought they really shortened the field, and that really gave them an opportunity, you know, to make big plays late when they needed to.
I guess the question is, what are you expecting out of these two teams this year? How do you see the paths rolling out from what you saw on the game on Saturday?
Well, I think really Simon Fraser, I think, is really ready to build on what they did last year, and he saw that 5-3 record in the regular season, and, you know, losing in the conference final, this looks like a team ready to build on that. You know, UBC, I think, you know, as talented or more talented than last year in a number of areas on this team, but it all comes down to being able to execute, and, you know, being such a young team at some skill positions right now, I think, is, you know, is really kind of hamstrung them early. So, you know, what's going to happen for UBC is, you know, really having to get right back on the horse against Alberta, and you know, we're going to have to see a big performance, obviously, you know, from Billy Green, the quarterback, you know, who's starting for the first time over a full season with the Birds right now. So I think how he develops is going to be a pretty good barometer to how UBC does down the season.
Yeah, your thoughts on Billy Green, Howard? Had a couple deep balls dropped in this game. His numbers, okay, you could say 14 for 23, 118 yards, had the touchdown, but if those deep balls are caught, suddenly he's got some pretty decent statistics. Didn't turn the ball over, only got sacked twice. Your thoughts on Billy Green?
Well, Well, I thought Billy Green played well, especially in the first half. And you talk about those drops. Coaches don't like to dwell on those things too much because really, you know, you're talking about, you know, one or two or three plays, as the case may be for UBC, you know, over the course of the game. And coaches don't like to say they lost a game based on, you know, just a couple of individual plays. But there was one pass to Mika Thiel, who, you know, is looking like he's going to be a game breaker for UBC, you know, right down there or on or about the 20-yard line, that if he made that catch, you know, may have scored, but I think obviously put UBC, you know, in the red zone with a chance to score at a juncture of the game where a touchdown at that point would have really helped their confidence. And, you know, that was a big drop. And you look at how the game unfolded after that drop, that was a pretty big play. So I think they're going to try and regroup from that. But, yeah, there were some big drops and really would have given them key first downs in a couple of instances, and it didn't happen. So, you know, UBC's got to show some maturity here, fight through that, and try and get those plays back when they head to Edmonton on the weekend.
Howard, how would you assess UBC's defensive play this past week? They lost a big component as well in Tyler Codron, who we now know is done for the season. But I think they certainly surprised me with their focus.
Yeah, they did too. I was impressed. I mean, really, you're looking at a Simon Fraser backfield you know, that's got a couple of different guys coming at you. Gabe Eppard, you know, more of an upright, you know, a fast guy, but not what you'd call an absolute speed burner. When you're trying to tackle this guy and bring him down, and Brandon Halverson, who is a small guy, you know, those two guys really brought something different. And if you look at what they did, you know, it was pretty respectable in terms of what the UBC defense was able to do against those guys. And then Bern Dietrich, you know, didn't have a touchdown pass in that game. So you got to look at what they did from a defensive standpoint and build on it. It was enough, you know, through most of the game to give the UBC offense a chance to win the game.
And, I mean, one guy we haven't really touched on so far too much yet is Jeff Thompson for SFU. This guy could turn out to be a real find.
Yeah, really. I mean, you look at a guy who came from St. Louis, and actually it was a funny story he told reporters after the game that, you know, he was looking for a real quality education, wanted to explore the Canadian schools, and had actually first called UBC for whatever reason, you know, whether it was, you know, his grades or whatever it was, or the course selection or whatever, didn't work out for him. So his girlfriend said, well, you know, there's another Canadian school locally that plays football, and that's Simon Fraser. So he went there, sent them his film, and they loved him, and they brought him aboard, and it's really looking like it's paying off. This guy on the clan on track team. He was on the 4x1 team that I believe they lost out in the semifinals at the Nationals, so he's a real speedster. But you look at, you know, his sense with the ball, you know, especially on those punt returns, he was huge, 134 return yards, and, you know, people can say he was the difference, you know, in that victory for Simon Fraser on Saturday.
Howard, SFU now has beaten UBC going back to last year three straight. So can we make it official now, SFU, the premier team in the Lower Mainland?
Well, I think you have to give them that respect that's due them after having swept them, you know, last year and beating them, you know, in a season opener last year when they were carrying a 25-game losing streak. I don't care who you're playing. If you've lost 25 straight, to come out in your season opener and win, they won impressively in that game. That said something. Also, that, you know, they were able to hang on and win a real tight Shrum Bowl last year. So you got to give them kudos for that and build on that with a season opening win again. I think, you know, SFU has really shown itself to be, you know, the program, you know, in the Lower Mainland right now. It's up to UBC to try and get a little bit of that luster back.
What has Dave Johnson done to turn that program around, Howard? And you know, for me, it's with all, you know, his coaching staff is all old UBC guys. I mean, it's true. I mean, there's no way around that. What has he done there, Howard?
Well, and this is obviously, is, you know, everything I say about Dave Johnson is no reflection of what Ted Gavaya has tried to build at UBC. But, you know, when you talk to Dave Johnson, just personally for him, what he likes to talk about is, you know, overall team spirit. And to talk to a guy after he just won his season opener, and he wants to talk about how lively and supportive his sideline was, as opposed to what he saw on the field. He's not shortchanging the guys on the field. They did the job. But I think that really is an added kind of extra kind of insight into the coach himself, that he looks at other things on the field. And when you're going to highlight something like that, I thought that was a pretty interesting way to look at a victory, in that you were assessing overall team unity by the way the guys cheered for the, you know, guys on the field from the sideline. So I think the power of positive thinking, people say it's, you know, really cliched and stuff, but I think in a lot of ways Dave Johnson's got that working for his team very well right now.
And UBC going into Alberta this Friday, Howard, we're not calling it a must-win, but we're saying if they don't win it, suddenly you're into must-wins. That's sort of how we're putting it, if that makes sense.
I think that's probably a pretty good way to look at it. And, you know, coaches will say after the first game of the year, hey, it's a long season. It's not a long season. I mean, these games are so crucial. And when you want to put that first loss behind you and you have to go on the road, you know, to get back to 500 this early in the season, if it's not must-win, it's definitely in the huge category anyway.
Really, though, do you think it's going to take that much for UBC to bounce back? The coaching staff seem pretty confident in especially their offensive ability, and it's true. When you look at it, if Thiel hadn't dropped those two passes, could have been a completely different ball game. Things seem to be at least in the right direction.
Oh, yeah, and I'm not trying to paint a picture that, you know, everybody was down after the loss and really, you know, just couldn't find the wherewithal to even talk about what just happened. I mean, Ted Gavaya was very, you know, forthright in talking about how, you know, when they needed to make big plays, they didn't, and special teams kind of let them down and those kinds of things. But in no way are they thinking they can't win football games. I mean, you look at that team and, you know, they did very well in a lot of areas of execution. I mean, let's look at the running game and the way that, you know, Dave Boyd, I think, has really stepped forward. He had a 100-yard game. You know, if the Clan had any weaknesses, it was in stopping the run. I mean, Billy Green really never got into a groove passing the football, yet in the second half, UBC was still able to run the ball with pretty great authority. Cheng Wei came in, had a couple of big carries as well, and they worked their way down the field. They just couldn't put together consistent drives, you know, even though the running game looked good. So I think they have a lot to build on, especially if you look at the way they were able to run the ball against Simon Fraser.
One guy you had talked about in one of your articles last week, I believe, Howard, was Spencer Betts, and he really wasn't very noticeable on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, and having not had the opportunity, obviously, to look at film of the game or anything like that, you know, you I think first have to realize the respect factor that he gained, you know, from that Simon Fraser team last year with a great freshman season, especially big play capability on special teams and kick returns. I think they saw him as a real X factor, someone they had to take out of the game. And let's not forget as well, Spencer Betts has not had a lot of reps with that offense. As great as the big plays he put up last year were, like a 91-yard return for a touchdown, 82-yard touchdown pass reception, he hasn't had a lot of snaps with the quarterbacks in that program, you know, based on the concussion and coming back, you know, midway through the season in his rookie campaign. So I think he's learning, he's growing, and he's given you a, you know, a kind of a window into what he's capable of doing. But let's not forget, this guy basically, you know, is a rookie with one extra game in his second year behind him, and he's got to fight through all those mental battles as well.
Howard, other games in the Canada West this weekend. Obviously, you got UBC going to Alberta. Two teams who think UBC will be battling for the final playoff spot. Manitoba will be going to Regina. And then who people are calling the two top teams in the Canada West. This will be an interesting one to follow. Calgary goes into Saskatchewan. That'll be one to follow the box score.
It certainly will be, and I think the entire country watches that game. I mean, there's always a great regional excitement about UBC-SFU when they get the spotlight to themselves, and, you know, clearly it was a neat game, a neat early season barometer for those two teams. When you get the powerhouses like that in the second week of the season with a full schedule, you know, around the country, I think the excitement level ramps up, you know, a whole lot, and I think that game is going to start to tell you, you know, just the bar, how high it's set for UBC and SFU this season.
Howard, last topic, it's a big one, but we'll just talk about it briefly. We have Bob Phillip, the athletic director for UBC, coming up momentarily. Jeff caught up with him earlier on in the week. Jeff brought up the NCAA topic, also ties in, of course, with SFU going. The people I'm talking to, I talked to a UBC coach about it, and Bob Phillip actually brought it up in the interview. You know, you hear Mr. Phillip saying how UBC has to take their time, they want to do the right thing, but even he agreed in the interview, they got to kind of make up their mind here pretty soon at UBC if they're going to do it or not, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And really, you know, I think, and I'm not saying that this is reality, but I think people following the situation, I think maybe if they followed it right from the start of the whole process, they're going to start to think there's a disconnect between, you know, what the athletic department wants to do and what the university, you know, wants to do. And you kind of wonder how close they are on the same page. You know, this is a process that started off, you know, with some pretty aggressive moves by UBC in terms of they were proactive in doing what they had to do to gain the spotlight from the NCAA, and now the process seems to have gotten to a real point where it's really, you know, slowed down, and people looking at us might think, wow, they are being extremely cautious with what they do. What the actual truth of the matter is, who knows, but UBC obviously is not rushing into anything here, and it would seem to go against the speed at which they first, you know, were looking at gaining membership in the NCAA, and we see Simon Fraser, who is basically, you know, I guess grabbed onto the coattails here and gotten into the NCAA Division II on their own. I think they were probably a little bit more sure of what they wanted and, you know, what association they wanted to be represented in and at what level as well. Just maybe a little bit more sure of themselves. And also, that might be a reflection of the fact that they had investigated this, you know, without success years ago, and it was just kind of on the back burner waiting for somebody to get the whole process going.
And that's certainly something that that Bob Phillip brought up, actually, the complexities that UBC has over SFU. There are more sports. Also, the issue with Okanagan campus wanting to join in the CIS. But one thing that Mr. Phillip did bring up a couple times in the interview, and he's mentioned this before, is the fact that he almost feels that Canada West, that there's a disconnect between Canada West and some of the bigger schools. He feels that it's almost becoming a bit diluted, and he did mention the idea of, you know, sort of a tier system there. Do you think that's really dead, or is that a possibility?
Well, I don't think the tiering system is dead. I just think the tiering system would require, you know, so many things to align themselves, you know, and I think people who've been in boardrooms with any kind of large groups with, you know, their own egos, their own agendas, let's face it, they're out there with all these schools, that it is a tough thing to try and make happen. Not to say that it can't happen, but I see definitely, you know, an opportunity for something like that to happen when you look at how many new schools, you know, are popping up that have university status, that want to provide, you know, more opportunity for a higher level of competition for their student athletes. I think, yeah. I mean, I think functionally it would work. I think there's enough schools to do that, and I think you really do need to do something, you know, to keep a big city market and its fans interested in the level of competition. You know, you don't want to think that that's a selfish way to look at things, but I think it's a reality that a big city market doesn't want to be, you know, getting all excited about going to play in a smaller, you know, center in this province or around the country. I think Vancouver sports fans, those that are at the University Ilk, really do look at, you know, the name of the school they're playing, and that has a bit of prestige, I think, involved in it right now, right or wrong.
Yeah, you know, Howard, I do have to say, not to be totally rude here, but, you know, I've done these basketball games, and when UBC's playing Thompson Rivers, it's not the most fun night at that gym.
Well, and Thompson Rivers isn't even a school, you know, that I'm including in this. I think that center is actually growing to a point where, you know, it is viable. And I've had people that have toured the facility there and say they really do appreciate what that school has tried to do. I think there's some other schools that are a lot smaller that have similar ambitions, and maybe they don't jibe as well with some of the bigger schools, but I do see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, and I understand, it's just, you got these new schools coming in, you already have a weaker program in Canada West basketball, we'll just say, like Thompson Rivers, and you add maybe three new teams, oh boy, that, you know?
Yeah,
oh boy.
Exactly, and you know, where is the talent? Is there enough of it to sustain itself to a level, you know, that you come to expect from a program like UBC at the CIS level, where they are contending for national titles, you know, both with their men's and women's basketball teams and so many other different sports? Are there enough athletes to go around? You know, becomes the question after a while. And in the end, you know, as hard as the smaller schools work, and if they are successful in starting to keep their own kids at their schools, you know, what is the overall level of competition going to be like throughout, you know, the Canada West? It becomes a reality of a population base, and do you really have enough of the depth to support, you know, what you're advertising as the best, you know, university sports league in Canada?
Howard, thanks so much for doing this. This is a topic we could go on for hours, really, but I just want to bring up one last point with UBC applying for the NCAA. To me, and, you know, we're going to get into this. We're going to start doing a little digging. You got your shovel out, Jeff?
Always ready, Daryl.
Always ready. Sounds to me like UBC's going for it. Obviously, there's a difference of opinion between the administration, the president, whatever, and the athletic department. And it just sounds like right now it's just tied up in some big old university bureaucratic process, and that could take 100 years.
I think you might be a little bit high on the 100 years, but maybe not too far off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think that they have to get a lot more, you know, in line in terms of their overall thinking. And I think there really is a thought, too, I think, from university administration, you know, in having said to Canada's number one university sports organization, we have tried to make this work, and we really want to let you guys know that we've tried as hard as we can, but I think it's time for us to move on if it gets to that point. But I think that's the process they're in right now, really trying to make absolutely sure that they're making the right move.
Yeah, sitting there waiting for it, counting the holes in the ceiling.
It's starting to seem like it.
Howard Sabour of the Vancouver Province. Howard, what you got coming up on the paper?
Well, Come on, thanks for the plug. Well, tomorrow, you know, we're going to explore the financial cuts that have hit high school sports in BC, and that has a definite impact on university sports. You know, the new budget, you know, today it really, it, you know, takes a huge chunk of the operating budget of BC school sports, which administers all the provincial high school football sports championships in this province. So, you know, without that, there's some jeopardy as to what could happen in terms of, you know, fair play, recruiting. They have eligibility commissions, all that kind of stuff. So we'll be exploring that in the paper tomorrow. And then on Thursday, the old high school football preview to start our season will be in the newspaper.
Awesome. Howard Samura. Howard, thanks as always. Look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Howard Samura of the Vancouver province. So just stick with the UBC Thunderbird men's football team there. You know, I think he agrees with us and what you saw. Signs of life. Good, not good enough, and he brought up the special teams, but, you know,
everyone's bringing up the special teams.
But big play here and there.
That's true.
Big play here and there.
Makes,
you know,
all the difference.
Maybe they can get things going. So, he saw signs that this could be a decent football team.
Well, there was a big difference between this year's home opener against SFU and last year's home opener. Much more equal on the field and on the stat sheet as well. Except for the score, which is, you know, as we've said, is not necessarily as indicative of the play.
And on to the NCAA talk. We're going to have your interview with Bob Phillip here in a moment. We'll preview that interview. We gotta go talk to the president or go drink beers with some people. I mean, we don't really know what's going on.
Nobody knows what's going on.
Well, somebody knows what's
going yes.
on. And that's who we got to go find to talk to. But that's the way I look at it. This thing is just tied up in... It's like one of those knots in your shoe you just can't undo.
Well,
why did I come up with that?
That's rhymed. That, you know, was good. Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you do like the really, there's like a really crazy knot in there.
Yep.
You almost get to the point where you got to get
just
the scissors
and just cut it off.
I don't even know what that means.
No.
But I'm referring to a bris there, actually.
Oh, dear.
Oh, you got that? That was late.
I got it. Let's move on.
but, I mean, you know, Bob Phillips is going to bring it up here in this interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Mike Mosier from the soccer team, and he had the same opinion. Is, you know, Mike Mosier said, I'm not for it. I'm not against it. I see positives in both. Let's go out and make a decision already. I'm there too. Let's do it already. SFU's almost making them look bad on this issue. And it's the kind of thing where, honestly, it's the kind of thing where if you're going to do it, great. But you can't sit on this thing for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, and maybe by the end of this year, maybe a little slack if they still don't know. But if they're still not doing it next year, guys, you're boring me now. Let me move on, and I'll go see District 9 again.
Yeah, it'll be out on DVD, like multiple versions by then.
Hope District 10 isn't made.
Did
I just screw you up?
Nope, that's fine. Are we playing Bob Phillip now? Or is,
yeah, preview yeah, okay. the interview there. Oh, well, like, are we playing
no,
it
no,
now?
No, we are. I spoke with him briefly before the UBC Thunderbirds home opener of football last week, and as we've mentioned, a large portion of the interview discussing the NCAA issue, but also a number of other things upcoming for UBC Athletics. So it's sort of our State of the Union address here with the athletic director. It's sort of an annual thing. We try to get in touch with him at this time of year before the season gets underway. And so a number of topics and very insightful answers, I think, for the most part, from Mr. Phillip.
You know, it's always exciting this time of year when, you know, athletics is ongoing throughout the year, but especially now when football season is here and basketball, volleyball just around the corner. What can we expect this year? What sort of changes do you think we can see with regards to the athletic program? Maybe some things that that people may be unaware of.
Everybody looks good and feels good this time of year. We'll see how they feel later on, but we're hopeful that we'll have some better performances. We're coming off. We've been pretty consistent in the last 10 years in some sports. We've been very good. We've started to get better in some others. So we'd like to continue to see some of the improvement. Football has been pretty tough in the last few years, struggling to get over 500. And as you know, last year they only won 2 games, but probably could have won 5. They were in games that they lost in the last minute. So hopefully they're going to be improved. We'll find out, get a better idea when Saturday rolls around. With the other sports, I think men's basketball had a great season, and I think they're going to be better. Women's basketball should come back and be improved. And volleyball, the teams were, you know, I think from top to bottom, we're looking to be competitive in almost everything once again this year.
In terms of some other things this year as well, I know with the Canada Games currently going right now, a few UBC athletes over there as well, and Anna Mae Pierce, who graduated last year. I mean, just phenomenal results for her at the World Championships. Is it safe to say maybe now more than ever, UBC athletes are really excelling in school and outside, off campus as well?
That's what we've been trying to say when you look at UBC, that our athletes are do very well in school in a very tough academic environment and do well there. And I think Anna Mae pointed that out, because it's fine to win at the university level, but when you set a world record, and she set a couple now, just as Brian Johns had done before, I think UBC athletes, Brian Johns and Anna Mae Pierce, are the only two swimmers to hold world records in the last 10 years, both from the UBC program. And Brent Hayden, of course, beating Michael Phelps as a former UBC swimmer. So the swim program has always been very good, but I think in the last few years it's really stepped up with some great individual performances. And like you say, I mean, Jeff Francis opened the door to our athletes turning pro at that level. We've had players in the CFL and a couple of others turn pro before, but Jeff signed a major contract and was a big player pitching in the World Series and so on. So I think individually the athletes are doing very well internationally. Of course, coming off the Olympics and the Paralympics, we had some athletes there as well do quite well.
And, you know, you mentioned the Olympics, of course, that just around the corner, and UBC playing a big role there. Is that going to provide some additional challenges in terms of the UBC teams, and, you know, scheduling? It is just around playoff time. Are there some things there that need to be looked at, or other challenges that the teams may have to face come February, March?
There's certainly going to be some inconveniences, but in the scheme of things, when you get a building of that nature for what we ended up having to put into it, and as you say, the commitment that the university and athletics made financially, being offset by the naming rights the other day and the Doug Mitchell situation, has been really good for us. But certainly there's some challenges for teams traveling in and out. The hockey team specifically, both teams will have to play an unbalanced schedule, almost the same for the Canucks and the Giants. So, but it's just 1 year, and it's a very small price to pay for what we got.
And speaking of facilities as well, I know something that has been talked about in the past with regards to Thunderbird Stadium and perhaps getting some new field in there. Is there any decisions been made on that? Or I was under the impression that something was going to be happening in the last year or so, but nothing has happened as of yet.
I think it was probably our fault in athletics, and mostly my fault in terms of scheduling. As you know, we put in two artificial soccer fields, and initially we thought one would go in the stadium, and there was a bit of confusion on the timing and whether we would put it there or not. We were having some debate, and we moved forward, as you know, quite quickly with Thunderbird Park, and have really done a good job of extending that. So the plan right now is to put turf in the stadium not for this football season, obviously, but for next year. So that's the final piece to that puzzle. There's two more pieces on Thunderbird Park, the tennis center, which we're hoping to move forward with right after the Olympics, and then the field house, which was also part of phase two of the build out of Thunderbird Park. We'd like to start looking at what we're going to do there as well.
And with regards to Thunderbird Park, what's been the overall feedback that you've been hearing, you know, both from people that have been there, from fans, but you know, most importantly, from the players and coaching staff? What have they told you about the facilities?
I think on the positive side, everybody likes the type of surface we're playing on. As you know, playing in the school year on grass is difficult because of we get so much rain, and we've had some challenges in the last few years with the condition of our surfaces, our fields. But I think the turf has been, certainly baseball thinks it's fantastic. I haven't had any feedback yet from track because it's fairly new and they haven't really had a chance to get on it much yet. But soccer's been really happy with their facility. Field hockey, of course, has been around. That surface has been around for a while, although the one we have now is a new one. So it's been very positive. I think what we really need there is to put in some washrooms and dressing rooms and such, not just for our teams, but also for people who use the facilities. That's been something that's been lacking for a while, and we got to address that in the next little while.
Yeah. And with regards to the NCAA issue, it seems to have been put on hold, at least for now, by UBC. What's the status of that right now?
Well, unlike SFU, UBC is a little more complex because we have sports that don't just fit right into where they're planning to play. We have hockey, for example. We have men's volleyball and some others. And we made a commitment initially to, if we could get the door open, which we were successful in doing, and that was a fairly lengthy process, as you know, even though it seemed like it popped out of nowhere. We were prepared in February, but a lot of people weren't. But we did say that we would
go back and take a look at all the issues. And there are a number of issues. The president's been involved in negotiations in Canada simply because there's a number of reasons, but one of them being that we have two campuses, and we're on the one hand saying that we're looking at the NCAA in Vancouver, but Okanagan's looking to join and has actually applied to join the CIS in Canada West. So there's some tricky things to do there. At the end of the day, we want to make the right decision and do what's best for the majority of our teams and the majority of our student-athletes. I think in this whole debate about SFU, about the CIS, and everything else, student-athletes has never come up. It's all about the effect on our Canadian schools or the effect on the CIS or the effect on Canada West. No one's talking about what's good or bad for Canadian student-athletes. We looked at it as having an opportunity to play at a Canadian institution and be treated the same way or have the same opportunities as you would in an NCAA school by playing in the NCAA. We thought that was a positive thing. It would give student-athletes a choice to do that and stay in Canada. And that we still think that's a very will have a very positive influence in the final decision. But we have to take a look at all the options, and we're doing due diligence, and that's what we said we did and we would do. And at the end of the day, when we decide what we're doing, I think that there might be people, I'm sure there will be people, this is Vancouver, there will be people that will agree or disagree no matter what we do, but they can't say we didn't take a hard look at our options and make the right decision.
Right. And, you know, you say the focus should be on student-athletes, and absolutely it should be. And it is one of the concerns, though, at least something that I've thought of and I've heard from other people as well, is that, you know, it can certainly be a benefit for Canadian athletes to stay at home, to stay here in Canada. But is it also a concern that some of those spots may be taken away by American athletes?
I don't think that's the issue. I mean, we have a world-class swim program, and it's all Canadian athletes. It's not that we wouldn't have an American athlete or a foreign student if they were good enough to play. We do have some foreign students playing at UBC, and that's just the way it should be. But it's not that we would want to go down and actively recruit large numbers of American athletes. We really think that in Canada there are a large number of quality athletes. Some are playing in Canada now, as you know. Some are playing in the NCAA, and if you took a look at basketball, like take the men's basketball or even women's, anybody that, if you took a look at the Canadians currently playing in the NCAA at the Division I level and put them all on one Canadian school, it would be a pretty good team. So I think that it's just about having that option. What I was talking about is when you look at a student-athlete, to get a full scholarship right now, you have to go to the United States, so we'd like to think should be able to get that in Canada. The second thing for us is competition. We've always been happy with Canada West, but in the last few years, as you know, Canada West has been quite diluted, more and more schools coming. With the every year, it seems like there's new universities popping up, particularly in British Columbia. And so it's not about competing against Alberta and Calgary and Manitoba in some sports. We will always do that in sports like hockey and football where there's limited numbers. But in basketball now, you're playing some schools like Alberta came to our gym once over 5 years for a league game. And this year, for the first time in memory, UBC does not play Victoria in Victorian men's or women's basketball in a league game. So there's a lot of there's changes, and I think it's time that we looked at some sort of tiering or divisional play, and we looked at increasing the scholarships that we could allocate. You know, as you mentioned, world-class athletes. It's a big, big time commitment to play varsity sport at a top level and also to go through school. And it's very difficult to try and work at the same time. We have to address that. And I think most schools in Canada give a lot of dollars out for scholarships, but they don't do it as much for athletes as we'd like to think they should.
Is there any sort of time frame for making a final decision? Do you have pressure from NCAA, or how does that work?
The NCAA as an entity is not... There's no pressure there. The conferences that we've talked to would like to figure out what we're doing for scheduling and other reasons. It's a fairly lengthy process. And as you know, there's been a bit of backlash towards Simon Fraser about whether they should be allowed to stay in as they go through this process. You know, one of the things for the students that we're not concerned about, but trying to be aware of is that they're going from a different set of 4 or 5 years of eligibility to 4. We're going through there'll be a year or two where you're not eligible for national championships and maybe you could stay in Canada and lose eligibility or maybe play in the States and not get charged with eligibility. We're looking at that. What's the least impact in terms of timing? So while June 1st is the date every year that you can apply, and that's being changed. My understanding is that the NCAA is going to go to make that twice a year, December 1st and June 1st. So, you know, it's not that we're in a hurry to go or not go. We would like to know what we're doing. I think that's
that there's a bit of uncertainty right now. It's affecting some of our recruiting and other things. And once we know what we're doing, like Simon Fraser now knows what they're doing and when, so that's pretty straightforward for them. We've got a few issues we have to iron out first, whether we go or stay at that point. But once, I think the biggest thing is trying to determine so that students will know what they're getting into when they come to UBC. Right now we're telling people we're in the CAS, and when you come here, with the time frame to get into the NCAA, you know, you could play most of your eligibility here, but it's just something we're aware of.
That's your interview, Jeff, with Bob Phillip, a little NCAA talk. Just telling us, you know, it's hard to get things, really what's going on, but we did get there. He did say they are getting pressure from not the NCAA, but the conferences where they're looking at joining, so there you go. And he mentioned recruiting. And, you know, I remember talking to Randy Knorr, assistant coach at UBC Thunder men's basketball, about a month ago, and he said, didn't affect our recruiting this year. Next year, we don't know. So they are going to have to figure out. They thought, you know, he is, and you know, I believe him, student athlete. Well, eventually, you got to tell these student athletes where the hell they're going to be playing their sports a couple years after they get here.
That's the thing. If you come here and I mean, the teams could totally change. The face of them could totally change. Especially with hockey, actually, they would have to in most cases.
Well, you lose your whole team because...
Almost, yeah.
Anybody who plays junior hockey...
is ineligible.
Can't play NCAA hockey.
Right.
I'm for it. I say let's go. I'll even put in nothing. I was going to give them money to them. I backed off. They got enough here. They got all that land they're selling homes for. He also talked about, and it's true, this is stupid, is UBC basketball will not be traveling to Victoria this year.
Yeah.
That is stupid.
One of the best rivalries.
Yeah, and, that is stupid with a capital S and an exclamation point.
I'd agree.
That's dumb.
It is dumb.
Yeah.
And
no excuse there. There's no excuse for that. It's the same thing. Sorry to cut you off here, Jeff, but it's the same thing where people following Canucks hockey and, you know, NHL hockey, the NHL, I mean, Canada West is this stupid. They can't even figure out what the NHL took them. Finally, they figured out that everybody here wants to see the Canadian teams every year.
Right.
You know, you can rotate everybody else, but let's get Montreal, let's get Toronto, let's get Ottawa here.
Exactly.
Well, they should be doing that with UBC, with Trinity Western and SFU. You know, now that Trinity and UVic.
Right.
And SFU this year once they leave. Just, you got to keep that going. And not having UBC basketball traveling to UVic, which is a great gym. I'd like to know the last time UBC didn't travel to Victoria. But,
it may never have happened.
Yeah,
you'd have to look into that.
That's just dumb.
Well, I guess that's our show, isn't it? That's just dumb, and we end the show. Well, no, it's a great one. I was glad to be here, and a lot of stuff going on. Football Friday, Tyler and I will be in Edmonton. Be sure to tune in 5:30 Pacific time, Daryl. Be sure to tune in for our pregame show as not quite a must-win, but a big game, as Howard put it, huge.
Next week on the show, we're going to be reviewing the UBC-Alberta game, of course. We'll do a little UBC-Thunderbird soccer, as the soccer teams will be getting their seasons underway, I believe the 13th. However, our big thing is next Tuesday is the first day of school out here on UBC campus. Always fun to have your show on the first day of school. And we're going to be having an good old-fashioned in-studio contest.
Oof.
Here, as the Vancouver Canucks, who are going to be doing training camp out here at UBC, have given me a Vancouver Canucks prize pack giveaway.
Oh.
We're going to have 4 exhibition tickets to Anaheim, April 24th, a VIP experience for you and 3 friends for a day at Canucks training camp right here on campus. And you get, like, some signed stuff, a foam, and they also throw in... And they're giving it to me. I should just take it out of the prize pack. They're giving me that Forever Faithful DVD.
Oh, yeah.
There. Yeah. You want to take a hammer to that with me, Mike? Or you want to win it? You're kind of like wringing your
hands. That's that great losing season.
The year the team didn't make the playoffs. Anyway, so we're going to be doing a big old studio giveaway. I'm going to be out on campus about 2 o'clock trying to recruit people. So that's going to be going on during the show from about 4:30 to 5. Big topic, Mike, will be, I told you,
something about TV
theme. Television show theme song. Mm. So, put you this way. If you know you're Mr. Belvedere, you got a shot. Although, you know what, Mike? I have trouble finding Mr. Belvedere like the full length version. It's easy to find.
I have like two CDs at home.
Really?
I'm not sure if that's on it.
Yeah.
Like television's greatest hits.
Yeah, I've got like it's easy to find Mr. Belvedere the shortened version, but the long one where they bring up how he was.
Have you never had Bob Uecker on your show?
No, I you know what I kind of imagine this, and Bob Uecker's absolutely unbelievable. And he's done everything, and you know you can't say a bad thing. But I'd like to do. Nah, I'm done. I was going to say, this idea I had for a Uecker interview, I don't think it's very good, is you would stand there and all that would be playing was the Mr. Belvedere theme song. Like, no words would even come across. And then you'd walk away and say, thank you, sir.
Are you going to throw any Major League clips?
No, nothing. No, it would be like an in-person interview. Sort of like, you know, for like Cameron. You'd just be standing there with the microphone while the Mr. Belvedere theme song playing. You're just kind of looking around, and he's kind of looking around. And then the song ends, and you look at him and go, thank you for that interview, sir. He goes, great being on. And that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how good it would be, or this might be overly stupid, but I actually thought of that one. Another great theme song. Did you ever watch So Cranky Anchors? I like that. I'm going to end the show with that.
Heard of that.
Yeah, we're going to end the show with that.
What was it called?
Crank Yankers.
Crank
it
Yankers.
Was the
puppets.
Yeah. It was the what's his?
The Jerky Boys kind of.
Yeah, it was the prank call show.
Yeah.
Wanda Sykes did a hilarious one involving going to a car rental place, and she there was a big thing of turd in her back seat. It's actually very funny.
Good times.
Crank Yankers theme. Here we go. All right. I think this is it. I think this is it. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Come one, come all, 'cause we're having a ball. We're just making some calls to strangers. Come on, you can say what you want, and they'll never know if you're deranged or what, but it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't really matter,
'cause we'll all be doubled over with laughter at the expense of others, maybe even your mother. Won't you join the Crank Yankers tonight?